Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Abby Silver. I'm the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals of Nevada, and I'm joined with Judge Jerome Tao and Judge Michael Gibbons, and we make up the Court of Appeals of Nevada, three judges. And it's just a pleasure to be here at your school. One of our law clerks, Amy, Judge Tao's law clerk, was a student here, and I know that she's very proud, and we're all very proud to be here and to conduct these hearings here, so thank you for having us. I also want to mention before we get started for both of the cases that there is a chance that the media will be here. We've had noticed that Fox 5 News, for all you students that want to watch it tonight, that they're going to be here. We have notified all the attorneys, and at this point, I'll ask the attorneys for Burrell versus State, Mr. Gill and Mr. Rogan, is there any objection by either of you if the media comes and covers these proceedings?
No, Your Honor, not on behalf of Burrell, not on behalf of the state.
All right. And what about the attorneys on, well, when I call Wasman, I'll ask them as well. So at this time, are the parties ready to proceed on Marcus Burrell versus State?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, then we'll now call to order case number 69924, Marcus Burrell versus the State of Nevada. And please, when you approach, can you state your name for my clerk?
Yes, Your Honor. Adam Gill, G-I-L-L, bar number 11575.
Would you like to retain any time for rebuttal?
If I can get 3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
You may. You can proceed whenever you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Adam Gill, and I represent Marcus Burrell. I represented him at trial and on his appeal. And, your judges, I'm going to just start with a brief description of the facts of this case. I know you've read the briefing, but there are a few facts that I think are very important. The two individuals at issue, there's obviously Mr. Burrell and then Troy Hashimoto, who I'm going to refer to as Troy, and Alyssa De La Cruz Cuisant, who I'm going to refer to as Alyssa. Those are the two victims, Troy and Alyssa. Mr. Burrell met Troy on an online Facebook group called Sneakerheads. It's a very common thing for, I guess, young people. Our audience will probably know very well what an online Facebook group is. They get online and they talk about sneakers. So Troy had a set of sneakers to sell to Mr. Burrell. The two of them had gone back and forth 10 or 12 times on this instant messenger group, and a lot of that discussion was where to meet. To sell the sneakers. Troy was going to sell this pair of sneakers that didn't fit him to Mr. Burrell. They went back and forth. The first part of the discussion on where to meet, Troy suggested Wells Fargo, which is near J Street, which is where Mr. Burrell resided at the time. There's a Wells Fargo that was suggested and also a park. Neither of those worked. Mr. Burrell went and suggested his own apartment. Troy did not want to do that. Troy and Mr. Burrell decided the entrance of the J Street apartment complex. And it's important to note that during his testimony, Troy stated that he was not nervous to meet in front of that apartment complex. He had some, and the state had elicited some responses both from Troy and Alyssa regarding their apprehension or lack thereof of going to meet to buy these sneakers or sell these sneakers. Troy stated he was not nervous to meet in front of this apartment complex. So him and Alyssa then go to the front of the apartment complex. There's an entrance and an exit. And at trial, all we had was aerial views, but you can clearly see it's very common entrance and exit. There's a gate code and gates. And they, Troy and Alyssa pulled their car up right up to that entrance and exit way. Marcus approaches. The robbery takes place. He pulls out a gun, points it at Troy. He takes the Nike shoes, takes his wallet and cell phone, and also takes Alyssa's cell phone. Marcus and his co-defendant, there was a co-defendant behind him. They leave the scene. Troy stated that they jogged away. Alyssa stated that they left quite quickly. And then it's important to note that all throughout the trial, we conceded that a robbery took place. Marcus was apprehended on another case. He was questioned by officers after Miranda confessed to this crime in my case. So we had conceded all along that a robbery did take place. However, it's our position that the state presented insufficient evidence to convict Mr. Burrell of both first-degree kidnapping and the robbery.
How is this case different than, say, an SVU case where you have a perpetrator make a victim go to another location for carrying out, say, a sexual assault? The state, in those cases, routinely files both kidnapping, first degree, and sexual assault. And this is done all the time in sexual assault cases. So how do you really distinguish this case with the luring aspect, luring a victim to a different location?
Judge, Judge Silver, that's a good question, and I don't clarify that as a luring. There was a plan, and the state presented no evidence to the contrary that the plan existed to purchase the sneakers. It was a legitimate plan, and I don't know if in your hypothetical there's an actual real plan or real guys, if you will. This was not
hundreds of cases. You know, I was on that unit. Hundreds of cases, countless cases, where a perpetrator will lure a victim to another location for purpose of, say, a sexual assault. It happens all the time. It's a luring of a victim to a certain location. How is this different then?
The state had argued during trial and in their briefing that the kidnapping took place prior to, and I think that's what you're getting at, Judge Silver, is that the kidnapping itself precedes, I think was the state's quote on their closing argument at trial, that the kidnapping was done before this robbery took place. So the kidnapping in the state's eyes is getting on, they also got on text messages, not only the Facebook Messenger, but they were texting one another. So for Troy to drive himself to the apartment complex prior to the robbery, it's the state's contention that that is the kidnapping. And under Garcia, Judge Silver, I just don't think that the state intended the double punishment for robbery and kidnapping when they had facts like this. And Wright. And it does state that if the movement of the victim is incidental to the robbery and does not substantially increase the risk of harm over and above that necessarily present in the crime of robbery itself, it would be unreasonable to believe that the legislature intended a double punishment.
Well, those cases are about, is that the PA system? Those cases are about when you have the robbery and the kidnapping going on at the same time. They're overlapping in time, and so at least arguably some of the same facts are being used to support the robbery and the kidnapping. But in this case, at least the way the state argued at a trial, the kidnapping and the robbery happened sequentially in time. One was complete before the other even happened. In fact, I gather their argument is going to be, even if the robbery didn't happen, the kidnapping occurred anyway. It was a complete crime, and then the robbery happened. And even if the guy gave up and walked away and didn't do the robbery, the kidnapping would have been complete. So at least arguably, you don't have the same facts being used to support both crimes. What's your response to that?
Judge Tao, in that argument that the state, and I do anticipate that they'll make it, there's a flaw because the law holds that it has to be for the purpose of committing the robbery. So if the robbery doesn't take place, the kidnapping doesn't take place. The whole purpose under the case law is that the movement, in this case, having them meet at a certain location that they both agreed upon, and I think that's important as well. They both agreed. Troy was not nervous to go to this place. His girlfriend, even the state cited it, but I did object to it at trial. The girlfriend was somewhat apprehensive. She'd only been in the town for 2 weeks. Troy had been there for 2 years. He wasn't nervous to come. But the risk of harm is another point that they need to get to. It's part two of the Mendoza instruction. This robbery, this set of facts, there was no increased risk of harm. The robbery took place separate and apart from any kidnapping. And to hold that the kidnapping took place without the robbery, I think is just an incorrect statement of the law. And I will get into the second prong of Mendoza, and that's that any incidental movement to the victim substantially increased the risk of harm to the victim over and above all that necessary present in the robbery. We're talking about substantially increased the risk. In Wright, this court reversed the kidnapping convictions imposed where the district court, in the context of an armed robbery, where the victims were moved from one room to another at the crime scene over a short period of time, and then tied up hand and foot with tape. Case is obviously different than a tying up hand and feet, and there is the restraint prong of this test, which is number four. This case is different in that there's no restraint, there's no tying up, there is a robbery, and any movement that these individuals made was incidental to the robbery, period. They were at the location, the robbery took place. I argued unsuccessfully, obviously, to the district court, that this was just a robbery. And I'm holding to that today. The movement in question here was still a very public location. The state argued that Wells Fargo would have been more public, and that's arguable, but this was an entrance and exit way to an apartment complex. People were seen crossing the street prior to the robbery. The state had argued that there would have been a better chance of somebody seeing and interrupting this robbery had they been at the Wells Fargo, but there were still people crossing the street out in front of this apartment complex.
Well, isn't that a question then for the trier of fact, with the location and whether or not it increased the risk of harm? I mean, that's what you're arguing out to us.
And you are right, Judge Silver, but as far as the test goes at this point in time, I think it was improper for the jury to find, if they did in fact find that there was no substantial increase in the risk of harm.
Well, I mean, arguably the defendant moved the victim to a place that he wasn't familiar with, the victim's home, to a place where the defendant was familiar with. Now, granted, it was daytime and it was out on the street, but the argument could be made that it's a street that the defendant's familiar with. He knows the rhythms. He knows who's at home during the day. He knows who's going to be a witness. He knows what the police patrol routines in the area are. So why isn't that enough to support the kidnapping?
But the record does not reflect any of that. The state did not elicit testimony that the defendant was more familiar or knew, as Your Honor had stated, the ins and outs or the police. The state didn't, none of that was presented to the jury. So we're assuming that the defendant is more comfortable with this place because it's nearer his home. And it's a fairly safe assumption, but the state did not present any evidence that he knew the footways, I think is what they argued in their reply brief, or that he knew, like Judge Howe just stated, that he knew the police comings and goings. There was no evidence that supported that contention. And again, I think this court needs to decide what is movement, because we're assuming that the text messages back and forth are movement, and these two agreed upon a location. Whether or not the purpose was to kidnap, or excuse me, to rob, was also belied by the record. There's no evidence that shows that this was his purpose from the get-go. We're assuming, and the state assumes in their response that was the purpose, but there was no evidence to support that the entire time Mr. Burrell had this notion that he was going to rob these people. So the movement itself I think the state had contended that the movement itself was from the Wells Fargo to the...
Well, I mean, he makes a special up to a particular location, and then the defendant shows up with a gun. You're saying that's not enough to infer that his intent was to move him there for the purposes of the robbery?
Well, I think that's what the jury found, and that is circumstantial evidence, but I think it's still a leap, Judge Tao. I think it's a leap that the state made in their closing argument, and I think it's a leap that the jury made when they ruled on this case.
So, Mr. Gill, back to Chief Judge Silver's original question. How is this different than the sexual assault case where someone is enticed to a location? Here, the victim was enticed to J Street. The statute uses the word entice. Do you really need other movement? You said the movement can't be incidental, which of course the case law says, but does that really apply when we're talking about the enticing element?
Well, again, we're assuming that there wasn't an actual plan to purchase the sneakers. Mr. Burrell was a known member of Sneakerheads, the Facebook page that these two met upon, and Mr. Burrell did have access to outside funds, and I think that's important. The state made a point to show that Mr. Burrell did have funds and could purchase. So we're assuming that this whole idea was for them to rob, but in actuality, there was a legitimate purpose for these two to meet. And the legitimate purpose is to...
As Judge Tao said, that's a factual question for the jury. So I'm focusing on purely the element. Can you have a separate element of entice that takes this case out of the realm of most of the other Supreme Court cases that deal with this topic?
Well, I'd be happy to brief that. It looks like I am running out of time.
Go ahead and have a seat, and then we'll let you respond to that on your rebuttal. Now that you have some time.
Thank you.
Can you state your name, please, for the record?
Yes, thank you, Judge Silver. My name is Jeff Rogan. I'm counsel for the state of Nevada. I work at the Clark County District Attorney's Office.
There's some important questions that I think this court brought up, and if it will please the court, I'd like to address those at first. And I think each of the questions that the court has asked so far are directly on point. The theory that we presented of kidnapping to the jury was this question of whether the defendant, Mr. Burrell, and his co-defendant, Mr. Hart and Eddie, tricked Troy and Alyssa to come to this location under this fake or false pretense that they were engaging in a transaction for these sneakers. Under the law, that's a theory called inveiglement, and essentially it is trickery. It's deceiving someone into coming to a particular spot when their true motives are something different. And I think, Judge Silver, your first question was in the context of SVU cases, and that's exactly where we see this the most. And I think for our audience's sake, you can imagine this in the terms of a child being lured by a kidnapper with a piece of candy. If the kidnapper presents that piece of candy to the child and says, come here, come into my van, I'll give you this piece of candy, his true intentions are really something different than giving that child a piece of candy. That's a kidnapping by inveiglement. That's a kidnapping by trickery. And that's exactly what happened here. The evidence that we presented at trial was that Mr. Burrell and his co-defendant had no intention whatsoever of purchasing these sneakers. Their intention from the very start, from the Facebook messages that were initially sent, was to bring Mr. Hashimoto, Troy, and his girlfriend, Alyssa, to a particular location in order to rob them of the sneakers. Now, a little bit of background that was presented about Mr. Burrell at the time was that he was unemployed, and this is by his own admission during his confession. He was unemployed, he was couch surfing, he didn't really have a home. He was about 19 years old at the time that he committed this offense. So he did not have any ability to purchase any of these sneakers. And as a reminder, these sneakers are very expensive. I think they cost Troy about $222 at the time that he ordered them on the internet. And that was the price that they were negotiating, was right around there. So,
well, you know, we're less concerned, I guess, about facts. Are we saying, though, in all cases involving Facebook or Craigslist, and in today's society, we know through the court system, and if the kids don't know, it happens all the time. This goes on all the time. So whenever you have a Facebook case, whenever you have a Craigslist case where there's a buyer and a seller, and a buyer and a seller go to another location, are you telling this court that in these types of scenarios, that now in a robbery situation, kidnapping is going to be tacked on by the district attorney's office in all of these cases? We're looking at the broad picture, not just these facts, but for all cases in Nevada.
If the facts support it.
How do you distinguish this from the Mendoza case?
Well, the Mendoza case was talking about a situation in which there's a movement of the victim by the defendant, by the accused, during the course of the robbery or the course of the other crime. So,
well, doesn't that go against you, though? Because in Facebook cases, there's always going to be an aspiration or a transportation by either the perpetrator or the victim in every single case. So how then would you distinguish Mendoza?
If I understand the question, in these types of cases, these Facebook cases,
you're always going to have an aspiration of a victim.
Correct. There's
always a kidnapping.
There always is going to be a movement preceding the actual crime, as in this particular case. The question is, for kidnapping, there must be intent. That's the element of kidnapping. An intent to hold or detain the person for the purpose of some crime, some listed crime. In this case, robbery, could also be sexual assault. So it's really a question of fact, not law, whether Marcus Burrell and his co-defendant, when they were luring Troy Hashimoto and Alyssa Dela Cruz to that location, whether they intended to hold them there for the purpose of committing robbery. Now, in some circumstances, the appellant is absolutely correct. There may be a situation where they did not have the intent at the time that they lured or that they brought the victims to that particular location. Their intention was pure. They were going to conduct a transaction, but it was only in the heat of the moment that they decided to commit the crime. That's not the circumstances here, and that's not the circumstances that the jury found. And since that's a question of fact, that we're stuck with the jury's decision, and then that's the appropriate decision, and that's what the case law has established. We have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state that any rational juror would come to that conclusion. And that clearly, after the presentation of the facts, was the conclusion that the jury came to and should not be revisited by this court. There was another question that Judge Tao asked, and this goes to...
Sorry, go ahead. I'm not sure if you fully answered Chief Judge Silver's question.
Okay.
Her question, in essence, is this social media didn't exist when these laws were enacted, and yet now it theoretically could be used on every single case, and you substantially increase the penalty by adding a kidnapping charge just because there's some luring to the location. Is that what the legislature really intended, to have an extra penalty on top of the robbery penalty?
I mean, even you yourself, the whole trial called it a robbery. It wasn't until closing that you added in the kidnapping.
Well, the kidnapping was charged from the very beginning. It was addressed during the opening. And the kidnapping is really a question of law. And yes, the answer is correct. They did intend double punishment for this type of offense. This is exactly the type of situation that we're talking about. The classic luring, as I explained before, of that child into a van is what we're talking about. The subsequent sexual assault.
That's not the best example because the statute reads a little differently as it relates to child victims than it does in other circumstances.
Arguably, yes, but it could be adult. It could be anyone else. We've had a case recently where a realtor was lured to a home under the false pretense of showing that home to someone, and the person's true intentions were to bring that person to that secluded location in order to rape them.
But we know with robbery cases, it's a totally different realm with the Nevada Supreme Court.
Right.
We know that, unlike sexual assault cases or child cases, exactly what Judge Gibbons said, robbery, they said, as a matter of law, if there's that aspiration of the victim and it's incidental to the robbery, only one crime remains, and that's robbery.
Two points I want to make on that. The first is that when the kidnapping, as we alleged here and as the jury heard, occurred beforehand, as the court is aware, then it's not incidental, and that's the first test of Mendoza. Counsel described Mendoza as a pronged test, and it's really not a pronged test. There are five exceptions, essentially, that are provided where kidnapping can be punished separately from the underlying offense like robbery or sexual assault. The first exception is that the movement was not incidental to the underlying crime of robbery. And since in this particular circumstance, the movement preceded, the kidnapping preceded the robbery, Mendoza's, we're done. We satisfied Mendoza. And therefore, double punishment for kidnapping can lay. In our closing argument, we also argued two alternative theories as well, two other of the exceptions to Mendoza that are listed in Mendoza. And that is that the movement, assuming that the movement was incidental to the crime of robbery, that the movement had an independent purpose that was to seclude the victims away, and that the movement substantially increased the risk of harm that Troy and Alyssa faced. Again, the court pointed out earlier in questioning to the appellant that moving the victims or bringing them to a location where they were unfamiliar on J Street would have increased the risk of harm. It's not as public a location as Wells Fargo, which, by the way, it was alluded to, was located right next to a park, which is a public place, to a J Street, which was shown there were not that many people there present at the time, unlike where what would have been at Wells Fargo.
So you wouldn't have charged kidnapping if this would have just gone down at the bank?
We would have charged kidnapping because we do have the luring that preceded the actual robbery had it taken place at the bank. And again, that was our primary argument to the jury, was this is a clear luring similar to bringing a child a piece of candy. And when I believe that that's what the jury found the basis for the kidnapping on. Of course, we have no idea whether that's true. So again, the court also talked about, I think it was Judge Tao, you were talking about the question of intent. And that is truly a question for the jury. Now, all of the facts and circumstances of this case indicate that the defendant, the appellant, Marcus Burrell, as well as his co-defendant, intended to commit that crime of robbery. And we know this based upon the fact that when Troy and Alyssa were brought to that location on J Street, once they produced the sneakers out of their car, what happened? Both Marcus Burrell and the co-defendant bring out their guns. And this wasn't a circumstance in which Marcus Burrell decides, I'm going to rob him. I've made up my mind right now, and brings out his gun, followed subsequently by Mr. Hardenetti. This was a simultaneous act that took place. And what does that tell you? It tells us that this was pre-planned. It tells us that this was a conspiracy, and that they decided before Troy and Alyssa arrived at that location that this robbery was going to take place. And that also leads the jury to make the further conclusion that this was a plan from the very beginning, not simply a plan that they hatched after they decided to purchase the sneakers, but one that they could rationally conclude took place prior to even sending the first Facebook message. So based upon all of that, the jury came back with that particular
Yes, you know, a pretty common fat situation is people rob delivery men all the time. So if I call Domino's and order a pizza, guy comes to my house and I rob him, is that a kidnapping? If I called him and ordered the pizza with the intent to rob him?
It could be if there's enough evidence for that. The state has
unless to, he really wanted a pizza.
Unless he really wanted a pizza. Now if there's evidence that someone else in the apartment with the defendant would testify the defendant was really hungry, he hadn't eaten in days, and he ordered a pizza, that would be evidence that would not support an inference that he intended to rob the delivery driver when he arrived. On the other hand, if there was testimony or evidence that the defendant was about to be evicted from his apartment, had no money, and really needed to pay off some traffic warrant that he had, that would be evidence that would support that he was luring that delivery driver to the location in order to rob them. And of course, that's why, and it's my contention, this is a very much a fact-based question and not a legal-based question. And that's the conclusion as under similar circumstances that this jury came to under the facts of this particular case. With that, I have nothing further to add. If the court has any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Michelle? No, thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
We'll put back 3 minutes on yours. I know you went under that, but Judge Gibbons had asked a question, so we'll put three back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And, Your Honor, I do want to get back to this lack of planning to commit the robbery. The state contends that he had to have planned this, but if he did plan this, and that's kind of what the state does need to show, there's a lot of factors that show that he didn't actually plan this. He uses his own Facebook account. He doesn't hide his identity. He doesn't hide his picture, his name. He also, at some point, uses the co-defendant's phone to text back and forth. And again, I go back to the fact that he was receiving money. The state gave an example of, oh, well, if the guy, and we're talking about the pizza hypothetical, if the guy has traffic warrants or is living on his couch, well, that's not this case. Marcus is 19 years old. Sure, he's unemployed, but many 19-year-olds are. And he's receiving money from his mother. And he's in fact, part of this group called the Sneakerheads. So I do not think, and I didn't think it at the time of trial, that the state has shown that there was, in fact, a plan in place to commit this robbery. And Judge Silver, you asked about the sex assault cases, and I think those are factual questions as well. Well, did the guy in the van have certain things in his van that would lead one to believe that he was, you know, going to commit a sexual assault? Oftentimes we watch these shows, Dateline or what have you, the guy lures a child over, they bust him, and oh, what does he have with him? Well, they told him to bring condoms and licorice or whatever, and he brings those things. That can show some intent on a part of that sexual assault perpetrator. But in this case, we've got a guy who the evidence shows is part of the sneaker group, enjoys purchasing, selling sneakers, doesn't disguise his identity, uses his co-defendant's phone. So that goes against this planning. Either they're the worst planners in the world when it comes to the kidnap robbery, or they simply rob these people out in front of a very public apartment complex, and that's all that this was. And with that, Your Honors, I do not have anything more. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any other questions? Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We thank both parties. This case will now stand submitted for decision. And again, if either of